I saw this thing the other day that the people in your lives are either deposits or withdrawals. When I'm taking inventory of the circle or the people that I spend the most time around, it's like, all right, how much are they taking from me? Yeah. How much is being extracted versus how much is being deposited? And not in like a very black and white way where that's opportunistic, but more so just like, what is the energy that this person is giving me? What is the value? And that value could be friendship, could be a good sense of humor, it could be a good conversationalist. You know, there's a variety of things that are value to someone. Could you be just someone that listens really well?
Hey, welcome to Current Mood. This is your host, Jacqueline Schneider. Current Mood is a series exploring self-care techniques, mental models, and the core patterns propelling our increasingly digital lives. Through conversations with thought leaders across creative disciplines, I get a chance to learn about unique business paths and pivots through the lens of mental wellness. Hey, welcome back to Current Mood. This is Jacqueline. I'm super excited. Today, I am joined by Faraz Zaidi. Faraz is the founder and creative director of Profound, a luxury streetwear clothing and apparel brand worn by literally everyone from Rihanna to Jack Harlow, NBA stars, and everyone in between. We recorded this episode during Ramadan, so a few months ago, and it's interesting. I was thinking of holding it till literally next Ramadan, but I think there's a lot of really interesting concepts that we talk about. We reflect really deeply on the benefits of abstaining from many of life's temptations, which is what happens during the holiday, and how the nearly, you know, month-long reset fuels so much beauty, introspection, and gratitude for community. We talk about Zaidi's superpower, which is empathy. He's such a sweet and kind soul who has this like really beautiful creative vision for not only clothing and apparel and home goods and just like the world, but just like the way he thinks about things is really unique. We talk about compartmentalizing life's intricacies, reframing burnout, and what it's like to really manage our time and energy. I really hope you enjoy this talk.
The external stimulation, and sometimes it's too much time spent with yourself because you become like an echo chamber to your own self.
Yeah.
If you spend too much time alone, that it's kind of like these like 10 ideas that you have keep bouncing off the walls of your own mind.
Yeah.
And there's no one to accept or negate them. So it's kind of just like you get stuck in this like echo of your own ideas.
Wow. Okay. So when's your book dropping?
I would say right after yours.
Oh, shit.
In fact, we should probably do like a joint drop of some sort.
A joint.
Yeah. Because I think there's a lot of harmony within our ideas.
Yeah.
To find some common ground.
I want to thank you for being in my life and for being here. Did we meet around like 3 years ago, Ramadan time, I feel like?
Or I think we met like right before Ramadan, yeah.
Okay.
And then, I just wanted to say the gratitude is mutual. So thank you for saying that.
I'm clutching my pearls.
I left my set of pearls at home. Just got plain old silver today.
I feel like everybody's wearing pearls these days. What is the deal?
Yeah, ASAP Rocky kind of kicked the doors open for that, right? For the rest of us.
I'm not mad at it.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I am mad at it when I see every kid in downtown Manhattan like wearing the same necklace.
Yeah, downtown Mecca is like downtown Soho or like Manhattan is like the Mecca of like fashion trend. So every like new thing that happens, like the kids try it out downtown or like LES or something like that.
So was it always like that? Because you grew up in New Jersey mostly?
Yeah, I grew up in central Jersey, the small town called Manalapan, and then I moved like 10 minutes away to another smaller town called Old Bridge. Okay. And then kind of just like kept within that 5 or 10 mile radius for the last 25 years of my life.
So when you think of Manhattan in terms of like your growth as like a creative director, designer, what did Manhattan mean to you back in the day?
Manhattan to me back in the day was a world that existed outside of the world that I knew. So it was something that was kind of very, very different from what I was accustomed to. Being born in Pakistan and moving to America at the age of 3, you kind of like view New York City as this outside world that you don't know much about. It's kind of like this dreamland of sorts. And I didn't like frequently visit it even with my family. And we'd go to like Times Square or something like that. Like the most traditionally kind of tourist-centric locations, we'd go there.
Yeah.
To Central Park, Times Square, and then like right back to Holland Tunnel and right back to Jersey.
Huh.
So I never explored like the inner parts of New York City, which are now like for me, where I get a lot of my inspiration, whether it's Soho or whether it's LES or even like parts of Brooklyn. But growing up, I didn't really learn about New York City until I was probably, I think, like in college or something.
So you were at Rutgers, right?
I was at Rutgers.
Rutgers.
Yeah.
I don't know about Rutgers or else I'd give a shout out.
Yeah, I mean, we could give a shout out to Rutgers. They taught me Adobe Photoshop.
Oh, sick.
They taught me some good
skills.
Some good design programs. Yeah, I went to the art school there.
Okay.
Yeah, so... yeah, I kind of learned a bit about art. I learned most of it like outside of that, but it was a cool experience overall.
What was like the moment where you were like, I'm going to design clothes?
The moment that I wanted to design clothes? I would say when as early as I can remember, I've always been drawn to all things visual, whether it's like interior design or furniture or the color that a room was painted or like the jacket that someone is wearing or the way... someone's pants was cut or the fit of the pant.
Mm-hmm.
I was always drawn to how things were packaged and put together in a visual way.
Why do you think?
I don't know. I think a part of me was just born that way. I think I just came out as someone that had some sense of design, intrinsically had like a little artist in me somewhere. And
yeah.
A part of it was probably through listening to some of the music that I listened to, watching some of the films that I watched. And just having this sense of curiosity of understanding that, you know, everything that is made is designed by someone.
Mm.
And then if I could have even a smaller, yeah, I mean, to a degree, like even if you could have even like the smallest level of influence on creating a product or a design, and you could do that from scratch and you could learn, like you could have the toolkit to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I think that for me at an early age was super powerful. And I didn't have like this very... I never had this strong vision when I was younger of wanting to become a designer or even wanting to venture off into the fashion world.
What was your, as a kid, like what were your curiosities?
That's a good question because a lot of the answer is in the question. Like the curiosity for me was the strongest pull. I was always curious about things and I think I learned a lot of that from... Like,
about what?
From my dad. I was just curious about the world. Like, my dad sort of raised us in a way where he always asked us questions. You know,
like
just
what?
Like,
what were his,
oh,
like,
Faraz, why do you, driving by, like, Faraz, why do you think this door are red? Or why do you think this person said this? He always had, like, this way of unraveling the world and trying to look at it with a different eye and a different lens.
Do you think he was, like, that was just... baked into who he was as a curious person, or do you think that was part of like his parenting style?
I don't think by any means it was a conscious parenting style.
Really?
I don't think my dad consciously parented us in many ways. I think it was more we became a reflection of who he was by default, just the way that his character was, the way he conducted himself, the way he thought about the world.
Yeah.
And a lot of that sort of translated over to myself and my siblings as well.
Was he like kind of philosophical like you?
I would say,
why is this door red?
Yeah, he was philosophical, but he was also very like humble and down to earth. And he had parts of himself that were very idealistic and a dreamer. But he did move to the States at a very early age from Pakistan.
How old was he?
I would say in his early 20s, he moved to a small town in Kansas City and he went to school for political science. And at that point, a Pakistani man coming to a small town, like, you know, somewhere in Kansas City, it was unheard of.
Right.
So he kind of adjusted to the culture and the society of America very early on, earlier on than any other uncles or.
Yeah. Was he like the first one here?
Him and my other uncle, his brother, were the first two here.
Okay.
And they kind of put the flag in the sand and said, okay,
Kansas City?
Yeah, like, they're like, this is cool. Like, you guys should come too.
Yeah. We checked it out. It's cool. Come on in.
We surveyed the land. We made sure everything was good.
Yeah.
I think you guys should come by. But he went to school there and he was listening to rock and roll music. He was, looking back at older photographs of him. he was dressing in a certain way, the bell bottoms and flannel shirts, and he had his like sideburns out in like a rock star way,
hey,
and
take
like,
it easy.
Like these large like sunglasses on.
Kind of like those.
They're like I would
they're
say
bigger?
3x the size of the ones that I was wearing today. But just like looking at, you know, like old photographs of this man and saying,
yeah.
I cannot believe that he was, that he had such a high level of taste coming from where he came from. So I think a part of that for me was inspirational. And like a lot of our like thought processes, like some of it's conscious, like we know where it comes from. Some of it kind of just seeps its way into us. And then once we reflect back sort of, you know, later on in life, we're like, oh, that's where that came from.
Where did it come from?
Like, I may have gotten my fashion sense from him.
Yeah.
Or I may have gotten my interest in this, like, on these wide genres of music from him, too. And then you kind of, you understand that's a part of you and you explore it more. And then you find your own sort of space within that.
When it comes to, like, how would you, what would you call yourself if somebody was like, what do you do?
What do I do? I think professionally, I am a founder and a creative director of a fashion brand.
Okay.
And I creative director is kind of like one of those words that's like right. in everyone's IG bio nowadays.
Yeah, I wanted to I wanted to know how you would ID yourself.
I'm just a creator. I like to build. I think if I were to succinctly summarize myself in one word, I would call myself a builder.
Builder.
Yeah, I like building things, sometimes like physically.
Linking and building with fans.
Yeah, linking and building with fans. That's a major one. Builder of all things.
I love that.
Relationships. I used to work in construction, so an actual builder.
Yeah.
Builder of collections and fabrics and clothing and stuff like that. So like the word is kind of versatile. And I think for me, that word is rooted in this like me wanting to create things from absolute scratch and understanding that I have like the ability, the skill set and the resources to do that. So that could translate to like a wide variety of things. But yeah, I guess like in a nutshell, I think I would be a builder.
Builder. I like that. I think that should be used more.
Honestly, I think I just thought of it.
I think you should just like, own that.
Yeah.
You're a builder.
Because yeah, I grew up in a builder family, like an actual construction family. So like that word is linked, I guess, in some ways to what I saw in terms of my dad as a professional trade, what he was doing. And now my two brothers are also builders.
Yeah.
So, like I just took a portion of that architect ideology. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to be an architecture of clothing or an architecture of fashion in certain ways. So, but like the essence of it, I think, is the same.
I got you. I'm a narrative architect.
Yes.
Which I say, and people are like, what does that mean? I'm like, I design words.
Yeah, because like, I just love the word architect. The fact that you added that in front of narrative is something that most people, like a lot of narrative is architecture of sorts.
Really
a lot of things are architectures, right?
Right, yeah.
But once you frame it in that way,
once
you add that framework,
oh my God.
then it's kind of, you think of it in a more mathematical, conceptual way.
So, it is crazy how you can literally put a word or change a piece of the construction and it's completely different, or someone sees it in a different way. You put a window somewhere else, you change the wall color, like you have a different way of putting the foundation down, you have radiant floors, or you have like you know real heating system, but like all you do a little change and
a little change
totally different
way. Totally. Yeah, it's the power of transformation goes such a long way. Even like walking into like a rundown space or like a house that needs to be renovated, I don't look at the thing for what it is. I look at what it could become.
Mm-hmm.
So I see the potential of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like, I grew up with like seeing potential in things. I think that a part of me, along with being a builder, I would like to call myself a visionary. I know that's putting a heavy title on myself, but
hey,
like the smallest version of a visionary is in the sense of,
like you had a vision that you just had a vision.
Yeah, just like the idea of having a vision and seeing a thing in a certain way, whether like I walk into this room and like, oh, this wall should be an exposed brick and that wall should be black instead of gray.
Yeah.
I see and I appreciate this thing for what it is, but I know that it could be improved in certain ways.
Yeah.
It just might be a taste thing. Like I think this should be XYZ. But the vision is always there and sometimes I can't turn it off. So it's like to a fault. I understand that things could always be sort of molded.
I want to hear about your business and like how you built that. So when you started Profound, what's Profound?
Profound is essentially a luxury streetwear / menswear / unisex brand okay. that carries full scale collections from tops and bottoms and tees and graphics, denim and outerwear. Mm-hmm. So it's like a full scale clothing collection that we built in 2008, early 2009.
Okay. Where did that come from? Like, why?
So Profound, kind of like there was never any master plan for it.
Okay.
It kind of was just the culmination of a bunch of conversations that I was having with my cousin and my sister and trying to come together and figure out how to do, how to sort of like take the talents that we thought we had and apply them to some form of business. I've always been business minded. I've always liked the idea of like creating a business. Just didn't know what else I would do aside from clothing. I felt like that was the thing that I was the most into and that I had like the highest skill level in. And even back then, like 2009, it was a lot more difficult to build a business. Obviously, like without the element of social media and all the resources that we have nowadays.
Just had MySpace.
Yeah, we had MySpace. but yeah, MySpace... was interesting because I don't know if we had like a brand page back then. I think it was like too soon for that. I think Facebook was like the first intro, like the grand introduction that we had was through Facebook.
Yeah.
But yeah, we kind of just came together and said, "Hey guys, I think we should try this thing." Had no like solid business plan. Didn't have a precise idea of what we wanted for this thing to become. But I think the thing that we all share in common is just the ability to like not overthink it and to just do it. I do overthink in certain other ways, I would say, but in terms of executing on an idea, usually kind of like, okay, if this like thing crashes and burns, it's fine, at least we attempted it.
I think we were
somewhere in New York at a dinner of some sort, and I'm just like, hey, what, like, we should just start this thing.
What was the first piece of clothing?
I think the first piece was a graphic t-shirt, and I think like the catalyst was like, I think we could say a lot through these shirts.
Was it, what was this, like music oriented or something?
So the first one that actually never saw the light of day was one that I basically like made on a computer, this graphic that I pulled from one of my favorite songs, lyrics from a song. And then I went to, I think, Staples or Walmart.
Bought
like this transfer paper.
Yeah.
And then like physically ironed it on to a blank Hanes t-shirt that I got for like $4.
Drop the song. Drop the song.
I think it was "World Is Yours" by Nas.
Okay.
Yeah, and which is off of Illmatic, which was one of the most transformative albums that I listened to. And then I kind of just like took that lyric, put it on a shirt. I think I have a photo of like my mom holding up the t-shirt in our living room. And then that was just for me to kind of like wear around.
Yeah.
And then that was never sold, but I understood there was like this very transformative moment of understanding that I just made like a physical thing.
Yeah.
Like I just made this t-shirt.
Yeah.
Even though like the t-shirt was Hanes or whatever, but like the idea that I had in my head.
Yeah. It was actually.
Yeah. It was actualized.
Yeah.
It was like a physical thing. And there's like always these like smaller moments throughout our lives that, kind of give us the motivation to keep going.
Yeah.
Even like me going to, after like fast forward, going to college and applying for this, there's this music festival that we used to have at Rutgers, I think called the Rutgers Fest.
Okay.
So at my design school, they had this contest, like all the art kids could design a logo for Rutgers Fest.
Okay.
And it was like 1,000 or something contestants. All these kids just designed like their own version of what they think this Rutgers Fest logo should be. So the winner of the contest got to get their design printed on 1,000 or 5,000 t-shirts, and they got like a $5,000 prize or something.
Yeah.
So I ended up winning that design contest, and me going to the Rutgers Fest, which was the music festival that we had, and like physically seeing all these kids like in the crowd
wearing
like this logo and this graphic that I designed, I think was also a moment where it was like impactful for me in the sense of I liked physically seeing people wearing my creation, and that may have fueled
the desire to
go forward. It felt very good even to this day. Like when I see it, a part of me is like, I don't ever want to become desensitized or numb to it. Like, I want to be able to see someone wear something and actually appreciate it, or like, you know, say, hey, that looks good. That looks good. I like the way you're wearing that. But like early on that first like Rutgers Festival thing, I remember it being like a super impactful experience.
So how did you go from printing Nas on a Hanes, Nas lyrics on a Hanes shirt to winning the festival to a 7-figure business?
It's always like, it's like the 5-year-old kid that's like using crayons to express himself on a piece of paper. And then
that, I still love crayons.
Yeah, I do too. That the paper just like sometimes gets tossed out.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, not many people care about the paper, but in my case, like my mom really like everything that I created from a very early age.
Your mom liked the paper?
Yeah. She kind of like just put it on the refrigerator or like posted it on a wall somewhere. As a child, that's that so kind cute. Of builds, that builds, confidence in your art. Yeah. Or in your form of expression from a very early age.
Right.
And then that, like, throughout the years translates to, like, oh, maybe I could try this thing or I could try something else. But as far as, like, transitioning it from that first T-shirt, like,
yeah,
to an
into
actual business.
A business where you guys are sold in, where, Bloomingdale's, Nordstrom, like...
Yeah.
Like, how many retailers? Like,
well, like, the like Neiman Marcus, Nordstrom.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of other ones, but yeah, it was a process. Like it didn't happen overnight, obviously.
Well,
but it's been a decade plus. Yeah, for sure. Sometimes it feels like it went back by really, really quickly. Sometimes it feels like a lifetime.
Yeah.
But the way I could like describe it. It was a series of very small intentional steps, sometimes unintentional.
When you were building the business and like. You know, cycling through, I imagine, so many emotions, working with family and, like, you know, like, literally your livelihood and, like, just having a personal life and just all the things. Like, how did you not burn out, or have you burnt out?
Yeah, I would say I burnt out 100 times over.
100 times?
But they're micro burnouts.
Micro? What's that?
They're not to the point where they're crippling.
Okay.
The burnouts that I've experienced and probably like will continue to experience are, I think, a part of my process that I've learned to fine-tune them. It's just me like kind of being intensely focused on what I'm working on. And in many ways, like isolating myself to the point where I'm not working on anything else outside of that thing, which I learned to kind of change over time. But it's been a process of like having no balance and just like fully like devoting myself to my art and my business. And that coming at the expense of sacrificing certain friendships and not spending enough time with family, not, you know, caring enough about health. But then I realized like there this like overworking ethic that like sort of was a part of media and a part of like culture at large.
Yeah.
Was not necessarily the healthiest way to go about something.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And then I'm just like, all right, this is kind of, you know, this I don't believe this to be the right formula. So let me go back and kind of tweak this and fine tune it.
As you were saying that you would probably burn out like more times, or you'll continue to do it. Maybe burnout's not the right word. I'm thinking like maybe is there a reframe? Like is the burnout that we're talking about, maybe it's not burnout. Maybe it's something else. I don't know. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. I think there are burnouts that are kind of debilitating. Yeah. And sometimes when people take their expression or their art so seriously,
yeah.
And let's say you put it out into the world and it's like, it's obviously prone to like public scrutiny and people are going to tear this thing down if they don't like it. And they're going to talk about it in certain ways
canceled.
That don't feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that for an artist, and I've had many friends that have gone through phases of wanting to do something artistic related.
Yeah.
Or being a creative of some sort and just kind of being intimidated or afraid by the public aspect of how people are going to view this, which is, I think, something like kind of intrinsic in most artists.
Yeah.
Because it's like what you're doing is so deeply rooted in who you are.
Right, right, right.
Even like fashion, it's like, all right, it's just a black T-shirt or it's like a gray hoodie. How deeply rooted could this thing be, right?
I mean...
But it like still comes from somewhere that's sourced in you as a person.
So is burnout, the way you describe burnout, is it like linked to like vulnerability?
It could be. I would say in many ways it's probably linked to overexhaustion.
Okay.
And having this like unstoppable stop clock in your head. Just like, oh, all right, time might be running out, or I got to do this or I got to do that.
Yeah.
And then just like really putting, applying a lot of pressure on yourself to like accomplish XYZ by certain season, a certain age.
That's real.
But then just like reflecting back and saying, hey, I think we're at a good spot. Let's create a strategic way to go forward. Just like I'm more like try to implement more strategy and less artistry, but the artistry is kind of still coupled in there. But like just like being a full blown 100% starving artist at the age of like 18 is like, it's like expected because you're still, you know, figuring it out.
Right.
You don't know what your path is. Like I didn't decide on a design major until I was in like my last year of college. I was just taking in many ways like random classes before that.
What's your superpower?
Yeah, it's a good question. What is my superpower? I think above all, the superpower would be my ability to empathize and have some level of compassion and understand that there isn't much else that matters beyond connection.
I definitely think your superpower is empathy. I would say.
Likewise.
Aww.
Yeah.
Is it?
That's why we connect.
I wasn't fishing for compliments, but you know, I'll take.
Well, you got one.
Yeah. Aw, that's nice.
Yeah, no, you created the perfect opportunity for me to give the compliment back to you.
I was like, all right, I'll take it.
I genuinely feel that way. And it's like if you, it takes one to know one sort of thing.
Kind of. Yeah. I was kind of like, I had a lot of friends growing up, but I was kind of like a loner kid.
Mm.
I don't know if that's part of it, but.
I could relate to that.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think I have a lot of that in me to this day.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like consciously done, like self-isolation or. I spoke about earlier, but like,
yeah,
I don't know, like the introvert in terms of like regaining energy from just like
totally
having your alone time.
Do you get tapped out when you're around a lot of people for a long time?
Do I get tapped out?
Like if you're around people all day, every day for like 2-3 days, do you need like quiet time?
Yes, but it also, I would say it depends on
who it is.
Right? Like it depends on who it is.
Right.
There's certain people that I could like hang with for literally 72 hours in a row and I wouldn't get tired of them.
True.
There's other people that are very draining. I saw this thing the other day that the people in your lives are either deposits or withdrawals.
Ooh,
so
what?
Either
wow.
When I'm kind of like taking inventory of the circle or the people that I spend the most time around, it's like, all right, how much are they taking from me?
Yeah.
How much is being extracted versus how much is being deposited? And not in like a very black and white way where that's opportunistic, but more so just like,
sure,
what is the energy that this person is giving me? What is the value? And that value could be friendship, could be a good sense of humor, it could be a good conversationalist. You know, there's a variety of things that are value to someone. Could you be just someone that listens really well?
How do you negotiate that energy exchange? Is it like you know it right away, or
sometimes, yeah.
Or also, sorry, my loaded 5-part question.
I love them.
And I used to get so grilled by my English teacher for having run-on sentences.
Same.
God, sorry, I have a lot of thoughts. Anyway, how do we negotiate the energy, and has that changed for you over the course of the pandemic?
Huh, that's great. Yeah, I think it has. It may have for many of us too. But for me, the pandemic was a continuation of my life as it was before in some ways.
Mm. Not much changed, except for we all got COVID.
I mean, I ended up catching it once.
Yeah.
Which was okay. But did get an opportunity to sit down and like hyper focus more frequently, because there wasn't obviously like a lot more going on outside.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like people, I think I've built like a way to compartmentalize the people in my life, not in a conscious way, more so just like you have your family, you have your closest people that you confide in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then your friendships are obviously like selected. So certain friends are good for talking to about business, or certain friends are good to just have a heart-to-heart with.
Mm.
Other friends are your music friends. Like, hey, did you hear this new song that came out?
For sure.
Like, there isn't someone that could provide you everything. Or there isn't a group that could provide you everything. So, like, I realize, like, yes, like, there are certain things that feel me, whether it's from a personal perspective or professional or career-wise. Mm-hmm. In order for me to like drive myself forward and advance in life and continue to improve myself, like I have to spend a portion of time alone. Mm. And a portion of the time with people that are an equal exchange yeah. of energy and goodness, in a sense.
How do you excuse yourself from a scenario where the exchange is funky?
I'll just
or do you just funny, not I put saw, yourself in that position?
It's funny, I saw this like meme the other day about like how we interacted with our friends when we were like teenagers and then 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
And the teenagers is like your friend like contacts you and like, hey, let's go to this thing, and you don't ask any questions. You're like, let's go. You want to go everywhere all the time.
Right, and wherever. Don't and no then, questions asked.
And then 20s, it's like, oh, who's going to be there? You ask more questions when you're in your 20s. And then once you get to your 30s, it's like, oh, I'm going to take a separate car. Just so like you have power over leaving whenever you want to leave.
That's so real.
So it's like once you sort of hit this like threshold.
Just, or you just, cruise with your cousin.
Yeah. So I like a lot of times I'll take my own car, but I'll just go with like someone that I know we kind of need to exit at the same time.
Okay.
I mean, like,
so you're more strategic about it.
Yeah, I think I'm more aware about where I go and why I go.
Yeah. Intentional.
A little bit, maybe not to the point where I need to be yet. Because I still enjoy going to places, whether it's events, but yeah, I think about it like 3 or 4 times more now. Whereas before it's like, okay, cool, let's do it.
Well, you also like have to drive kind of far.
I also have to drive kind of far.
Yeah. Thanks for coming to Brooklyn.
Of course. This drive was great.
Was it good? It got you out of the house and stuff.
Yeah, it was good.
Did you jam? What were you listening to?
I was listening to a book summary from the book Atomic Habits. And I was also listening to your podcast.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, I wasn't trying to lead you there. I forgot. I was like, what music were you listening to?
Actually, I haven't been listening to much music for the past week or so.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, I'm fasting right now. Yeah. So
is music part of that for you?
I would say any sort of unnecessary stimulation or dopamine, I try to extract. Try to simplify and distill things down to just the core necessities.
That is smart.
So, yeah, it's like I'm usually a little conscious of like the music that I do listen to, even outside of Ramadan or outside of when I'm fasting. Like, if like the bars are crazy or if like some of the lyrics are a bit too vulgar, which like the large, like, more often than not, like it's hard to like find something that's cleaner.
It's consuming.
I still listen to it. Like there's a lot I still listen to unconsciously. I'm just like, it's playing in the background. But I find I learn or like the time is better spent when I'm listening to something like a podcast or like a talk or something like that.
Right.
Music wise. I'll always listen to music. Yeah. It's been a part of me since as far back as I can remember.
But I knew that was when we hit our friendship milestone when I was like, here, I made you a mixtape.
Yeah. Oh, that was amazing. I've listened to that through and through. And I mean, the level of curation, because everything is curation. Like it's like there's an infinite amount of songs.
Yeah.
It's an infinite amount of everything. But like the way you curate something, it tells a lot about, you know.
You know, I gotta be an architect everywhere.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. So I appreciate that playlist. I listen to it a lot. I have this one called Sanctuary.
Okay. I think you shared that with me.
Yeah.
I feel like I have it somewhere.
Yours was Lost and Found, I believe, which is a great
name. It was. Yes. I would love to talk about Ramadan.
Mm.
Can we?
Of course.
Okay. Oh, great. Yes.
It's a great thing to talk
Got
about.
Got it. I am learning more and more about Ramadan. For people who don't know what that is, can you just give us like a quick rundown of what Ramadan is?
Ramadan, in the most basic sense, is a pillar of Islam, which is a requirement for every Muslim to have this annual reset of when you're fasting from sunrise to sunset.
Okay.
I would say it's become different things for different people.
Yeah.
But in terms of what it's actually designed to be, is a way for us to be more in tune with our own selves. This is a way for us to remove all external forces that are a part of our lower selves, whether it's watching the wrong movies or music or, you know, spending time with certain people you shouldn't be spending time with. Like, there are all the, these different factors that come to play in our daily lives that we should be more aware of. Ramadan is a time for us to really sit down and distill only the necessities. So obviously, like, there's no, you cannot drink any water, there's no food. You have to abstain from certain things.
Like what?
So, no physical contact with anyone else.
No hugs?
I mean, there's nuance to a lot of these things too, but like, yeah, I mean, I would try to avoid.
So like...
Hugs are cool. I mean, it depends.
Okay. But like, no like sexual contact.
Yeah, yeah. No like, sexual contact. That's okay. It's not allowed. But it's all basically to get one in tune more with themselves.
Sure, sure, sure.
And with their creator. So there's this like constant reminder, even Islam in the way it's designed, 5 times a day to pray and to remind yourself that you come from the source. Because a lot of times we get caught in our own worlds, our own egos, our own heads, that we remove any idea of like, oh, we're here for a purpose. Right. Even like my own self, I'm like, I get distracted with work. And so Islam is designed, many other religions too. It's not like there, you could choose your path.
Sure, sure,
it's sure. Like, by the way, not all of this is even specific to Islam.
Right.
The concept of fasting is in, you know, a lot of the Abrahamic religions as well.
Yeah.
So it's all sort of rooted in this idea of let's recenter and let's find a way to, whether it's like appreciate and have more gratitude for our own lives because there's less fortunate people. So I was told that like what Ramadan was when I was a kid was what my parents told me. It's like it's a way for you to feel what the poor feel. In the most like simplistic way,
right.
It's like, and it, like you're really good with this, like in terms of taking gratitude and really highlighting it and understanding that, you know, there are all of these things that happen in our daily lives that that sort of just passes by, but if you really stop, hit the pause button for a little bit, sit down on with a journal and you write, "I am grateful 10 times a day."
Yeah,
so you know, it's a practice of yours that I love. I don't know if it's 10, but it's a 10, 25.
It's just however many you're feeling.
It's however many you're feeling, right? So it's like just like the physical act of, you know, writing something down. I think it's super powerful. But yeah, there's like my brother and I were at a dealership the other day, a car dealership, to get a car serviced, and the lady behind the counter was well, actually, this was a few weeks ago, so it was prior to Ramadan.
Yeah.
The lady behind the counter was like, "Oh, can I get you guys some?" No, it was not prior to Ramadan. It was basically like right when Ramadan started.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. She offered you a beverage.
So she offered us a beverage, and we're like, "Oh no, we're fasting." And then she was like, "Oh, I'm fasting too."
Oh.
And we're like, "Oh wow, like it's Ramadan." She's like, "Oh no, it's like I'm just intermittent fasting."
Oh.
So it's like in that, yeah, I was trying to like recollect exactly when it was because it became a blur. Because I thought about this moment because it was sort of like, it was a point where I realized like, oh wow, a lot of what we practice is designed. It's like in the system that's built around, like,
right.
She's like this thing that has become intermittent fasting, which is something that people are doing a lot more of. It's become like a trend, right?
Yeah.
It's like designed in the religion already,
right?
Or it's designed in the faith.
Yeah.
And it essentially accomplishes the same. Like if my purpose of fasting was to lose weight, I'd lose weight.
Right.
If it was to like right. cleanse my mind,
it's
I'd be able
whatever
to
whatever you think it is.
That's what I was like. It's very, it's like the structure is provided, like the rule book is provided, and it's up to you and it's up to me to how we want to apply that to our own selves.
Right.
Like I might need certain discipline with like, you know, whatever. Whatever the thing is, I might need to reevaluate how much time I'm spending doing XYZ.
Yeah.
So this kind of really allows you to think about more consciously how you spend,
right?
How you spend your days.
How many days is Ramadan?
So it's 30.
30 days.
Yeah, and it's a full month.
What day are we in now?
Number 7.
7. Okay. What have you learned so far? Or what have you reconnected with?
Yeah, that's good. I would say like learning and relearning every year. It's kind of like I learn this every year, but then I there's a it gets a bit muddy throughout like halfway point right. of the year. It's like right. more often than not, we go back to our default selves just because like we're kind of programmed how we are.
Right.
But then like it's Ramadan like a hits
software
again.
Update
yeah. For us. Yeah. It's just like that refresh, and then Ramadan hits again, and then we have to kind of relearn the same things that we learned last year. But I'm a believer in that a lot of the learning, initial learning, kind of sticks with you, even if it's a small part of it. But I learned a little bit more about the importance of discipline, which is like, that's a concept that we all know about, but it's like, what are we disciplined about and what are we accomplishing?
Right, when you're fasting all day long, that's like, it's discipline.
Yeah.
It's a lot of things, but, you know, that's definitely part of it.
Yeah, and just like the importance of time, because I've lost quite a few people the last few years, last 1 year to be more specific, but taking more account for time, I think, is a big thing too. Understanding that, you know, we all have the same 24 hours. Like, how are we going to spend this time? And like, what's the most we could do with this? But we're all in a position where like, we always feel like we don't do enough and like we could do more. And like, there's all these things that kind of weigh us down.
Yeah.
But the overall like objective for all of us just should be to appreciate what we did do. And like, obviously like continue to strive to do more. So you got Ramadan in a sense is kind of just a way to evaluate ourselves and to get us more in tune with the Creator. So super useful, I think. It's like, it's a beautiful design of how it's like created. I think.
I'm a fan.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a fan.
I'm glad.
I'm not fasting this week, but I started out pretty strong, and I'm gonna go back.
Amazing.
And this is like the third one, but it's always interesting. Like when I share with people like that I'm observing Ramadan, they're like, "Are you Muslim?" I'm like, "No." Mm. So it's interesting, like, kind of cross-section of like just tradition and like sacrifice, but then also religion, and just there's just so much baked into so I don't know, it's an interesting kind of cross-section, but that's kind of like who I am.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I love
really
that
identify as like one thing.
And you don't, I don't think anyone has to, because like, even if you remove the Muslim label from it,
yeah,
and if you're able to accomplish the same thing.
Yeah, I love
it. The label itself doesn't have much weight at that point. Unless you want to give yourself the label, then that's a personal choice.
Yeah.
But I always think like a lot of, like it's like a mildly intimidating thing going into Ramadan. It's like, oh, this is going to be tough. And so it's often hard because even for me, like the caffeine gets to me very early on.
Ooh, yeah,
first few days are like, damn.
Like
noon to like 2, it's like you kind of want to take a nap and you're losing it. You're losing it for a little bit.
Yeah. Do you take a nap?
I did the first, I would say, like 2 or 3 days. Yeah, I knocked off for a good like hour.
Okay.
But then now I've become more accustomed to it. I mean, some people like have caffeine during what they call sahur, is the time when, like in the morning when you're supposed to eat for that day. So I usually just drink water and have a banana.
Oh, so you don't have caffeine at all during Ramadan?
I tried that.
You tried?
Yeah.
Oh, you tried to do it?
I've never been a super early morning person. It's something I wish that was a part of me. I think I thrive a bit more, not as much late night anymore. But I think like if I were to pick one, I would choose like a later night versus an early morning.
Yeah, you were like powering through some pretty crazy late nights when I first met you.
I know.
Be like 2 a.m. Be like, what's good? I'm like, you are up.
I know.
I'm like,
I know.
I was asleep, fam.
Yeah, anyone that knows me knows I'm 2 a.m. is the hour.
Prime time?
Yeah, I guess. In some ways. But I'm trying to make it 1 a.m. instead of 2.
Okay, respect.
So I could get up the following morning 1 hour earlier, I think goes a long way.
Do you get up, eat, and then go back to sleep? I know some people do, but some people just stay up.
The first few days I stayed up and I ate, and then I just like just do the water. I get up for a water.
Yeah.
Maybe like a piece of fruit or something.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, because you have it's like a big iftar, like big dinner?
A big iftar. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I have a couple of friends have like 2 dinners.
Yeah.
My friends have been hacking it. I don't know how, everyone has a different schedule.
It's beautiful. What's beautiful about the month is also there's like a very strong sense of community in this month.
Yeah.
So there's a way for you to see people that you haven't seen for a while. And even my masjid by my house, they have a dinner there every night. And
every night?
Yeah. It's like a way to socialize. It's a way to get together. It's a way to like break bread together.
Are you going tonight?
We've been doing it for the most part. Been doing it at my home in Jersey with my family.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of keep it. But I used to go a lot last year. But that's one of the things that I really, really like about the month.
Yeah.
It's a way to spend time with people.
Yeah.
And everyone just comes out the woodworks.
Really?
Yeah. There's people you haven't literally seen since last Ramadan.
Okay, fool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And that's like, the social component is a big part of the design too, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it ties into, we were never sort of meant to just like spend our lives in a room by ourselves.
Correct.
We were meant to interact.
Yeah.
Again, like not become an echo chamber to your own thoughts.
Right.
Kind of like learn from others. Like how much have I learned from you? Just like our conversations and talking, and we have so many of the same interests. So when you find like people that have, you know, similar interests, it's easier to build and maintain a relationship with them. But yeah, there's so much to the month.
Yeah.
That it's a very important grand reset.
Mm-hmm.
It's like refilling of the spiritual cup, and to do it once a year, super necessary.
It's really cool because I like have a lot of friends who are observing who are Muslim, mm-hmm. and then I have other friends who like maybe grew up Muslim but they're not religious anymore so much, but like they observe Ramadan to like connect with their family or to like be part of a community. Mm. Everyone has their reason, but it's cool. Like I've been really able to connect with so many people on deeper levels. Like, oh, I went to like my bodega the other day to get dates, because dates are like how you break fast. A lot of people break fast. And I was just talking to my guy and we were just like catching up. And then I said, oh, how are you today? Like, what's going on? And like, I didn't say anything, you know, about fasting or anything, but we were both fasting. And then as soon as I came about the dates, he was like, he gave me like a look.
Yeah.
And then we just had a conversation that we would have never had before. Just like about the neighborhood and about the new store he was opening. And just like, it was just like opened something up. It was just really cool.
Yeah. It creates like this instant connection, right?
Yeah. And I wish there were like easier ways to do that when you meet strangers or you see acquaintances, rather than talking about like, what do you do for a living? What are you wearing?
Right,
like,
right.
Just the basic stuff. It's just like a way different way to connect. And like, I feel like that would be so cool to just have something like that to connect with people around that wasn't based on like aesthetic or like merit or the normal things. Like maybe we just need to create something else.
No, I love that, because sometimes you need just like pure simplification to really break this thing down to the necessities, right? Even like when I was driving to the parking garage that I parked at down the street, there's this dude selling prayer rugs and dates like right outside.
Yeah.
Right across. Did you see like right across the street there's a guy?
I hadn't seen him yet.
And he's selling these these little oil scents.
Okay.
Called Ithar.
Yeah.
Which smell like really good.
Really?
Yeah.
Should I go over there?
Yeah, we might have to take a walk there a little bit later.
Okay. So. But you like, did you connect with him?
I waved at him.
Okay.
Yeah. But I liked the, that's why I like.
It's just kind of like the all knowing, kind of like, hey, what's good?
Yeah. I give him a little head nod and a wave.
Yeah.
I like being in this area because of that.
Head
get
nod
a lot,
and a wave.
A lot more culture and people that come like directly from their homeland that are making a living for themselves here.
We're in Brooklyn?
Brooklyn and Queens.
You know, okay. Like, outside
even, like,
of Jersey?
Astoria. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, Jersey's like so spread out and like so suburban, but here it's like you have to interact with people. There's like literal street entrepreneurs, you know, everyone's there.
Do you like that part of it? It's being able to interact with everyone?
That's why I live here.
Yeah.
It's like what I love. Like, I tell people this actually that ask me from California, where I'm from, they're like, oh, do you like New York better or like Cali better? And I was like, it's different, but what I love about New York is like being able to go to the store, go to the bodega, go to the coffee shop, go to my neighbor, wherever, be on the street, and like there's just such a sense of community because there's just a different culture of like walking and commuting, and like everything's so close that you're just kind of forced to interact with people. So yeah, I love that. I mean, sometimes it's a little hectic, like if you're walking down Fulton or something.
Fulton gets a bit hectic.
But she don't like
sometimes
Fridays.
I like it. I like the hecticness of it sometimes.
Yeah, I do for the most part. But
it could get to
I'm
be
like,
too much. Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, another siren. Like, what? Someone's yelling. Like, the kids are out of school. Like, what is it now? Yesterday was a marching band. Literally.
They sound good?
They did. But I was like trying to focus. And they were like, there's a school next to me, a high school. And I think they were practicing. And I was just like,
Focus is a tough thing to come by out here.
Yeah. I definitely like the next place I live is going to be situated. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty quiet for the most part, but like once the weather gets nice, once it's like over 50, the streets of New York are a different place.
I know.
Like you got the jerk chicken barbecue guys on like every 10 blocks.
Yeah.
You got like people out here selling shit on the streets. Like everyone's just out because they've been inside for winter for so long.
I know. It's like the best time of year. It's so amazing.
It is. It's amazing. It's why we struggle for the cold weather, right?
Exactly.
I don't know. Yeah. Is it? If I tell myself, brainwash. What is creativity?
What is creativity? Creativity for me is finding a reason for something to exist and applying purpose to it.
What? Wow. Creativity is finding a reason for something to exist.
Yeah, and applying some purpose to it because...
My head just blew up. That is like, whoa. That's pretty strong.
Thank you.
All right, drop the mic.
This thing is like latched on. I don't think we could drop it. But I think we could empower ourselves to become creators, and we could create, in many cases, whatever we want. So once we give ourselves the ability to do that, and whether it's fashion, whether it's a podcast, whether it's music, put ourselves on that path to become a creator.
Yeah.
Then, there's hurdles along the way, but
how do you deal with
eventually get to it? I think
get to.
Just like actualizing what you want to do.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes.
How do you deal with like deep emotions when you're trying to be creative?
I channel them into the work.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're like deeply angry or sad?
Anger isn't an emotion that I let hang around for more than 2 minutes.
Okay.
Sadness sometimes lingers for longer.
Yeah.
A lot of the music that I listen to when I'm working is sad, is I guess could be classified as sad.
Sad boy.
In some ways. it's channeled through the work, whether it's just playing in the background or whether I'm actively listening to it.
So, okay, that's interesting. So you don't let anger hang around for more than 2 minutes.
I try not to. Sometimes it gets the best of us.
Yeah.
But anger, it's like very like, it's there for a little bit. I feel it.
Yeah.
Even sadness, like you'll sit with it for a little bit.
Yeah. So you just channel into your work.
For the most part. I don't know what that ends up looking like.
Yeah. But, I'm like, how does the work look?
But I think emotions like that are kind of temporary.
Right, right.
Like it's a mood, right?
It is a mood.
Like I may feel a intense burst of joy within the next 5 minutes, and then I might feel really anxious or sad.
Mm.
So none of those define me, but they're all a part of me and they're a part of you. Mm. So how do we like spend enough time in that emotion for it to benefit us versus for it to take us over?
Again, right? When is your book coming out?
Expending a year in intense grief from losing people and having this like deep sense of loss.
Yeah.
That kind of like brings you a bit more in tune with emotion as well. Mm-hmm. And then you realize, okay, you can't sit in this feeling for a week or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But you should feel this feeling because this feeling is important.
Right.
And it's important because it's there for a reason. It's like, it exists for a purpose.
Yeah.
So even, it was like this Tumblr thing I was reading from Frank Ocean the other day. He was like writing a letter to his 5-year-ago self.
Mm.
And he was telling himself he's going to be in a relationship, but it's going to break his heart. In fact, he's going to get his heart broken twice, but it'll help him write an album.
Wow.
So like whatever the grief is that you have, like you could channel that to...
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably easier in music, but because like that Frank song or that album ended up being like a version of that like breakup that he had.
Yeah.
But like for fashion, it's like there is a certain level of design that goes into the imagery or the words that we choose or the quotes that we choose. A lot of it's like has this romanticism, this poetic nature to it.
Yeah.
A lot of that comes from even some of the folk music that I listen to, which is rooted in like spirituality. And like, I don't like the word sadness is like, there's like a negative stigma to sadness.
Yeah.
I never thought it was like a bad thing.
Yeah.
again, like anything that is not in moderation is a bad thing. Sure. But like sadness could be a very beautiful thing too, right? Like, yeah. It could be a very useful thing. I actually like to feel it sometimes. But again, not for too long, because like, right. Because then it just becomes your defining characteristic.
I mean, the first book that I started writing, literally, somebody broke up with me. Mm. I was dumped. Mm. And literally 2 hours later, I started writing this book.
See?
I channeled it. Right? I was like, I'm not going to be sad. Because like it wasn't something that should have worked out anyway. So I'm just glad that like they pulled the plug first. But I literally sat down and I was like writing shit. And I was
That's
like,
like a prime example.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, channel it to the music or write something.
But yeah, because like what's the alternative? Just keep it in our head, right?
Well, and also like it's a spectrum of emotion. It's like on one side of sadness is like, I don't know what it is. Everyone is different, right? But mm-hmm. like it's a spectrum. So like if you're deeply, you know, like I think Erykah Badu says like love and hate are like the same thing, basically, you know,
right.
They're just opposites.
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more.
So like I can see why like an extreme emotion would drive you to, you know, I don't want to use the word I'm thinking, but like to like release something that was of value, that is equally as strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe not all your artistic endeavors when you're sad or upset or in love or whatever are going to be mm-hmm. good, but mm-hmm. you have a strong driving emotion that's going to propel some sort of output, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with that, but
no,
it's a lot.
Yeah, no, I get it. Cause, I think after having done it for a certain number of years and like channeling whatever is going on in our heads and like putting that in the form of a fashion collection, for example.
Yeah.
It's like, again, like how much of that could you put on a jacket or a shirt or something?
I mean,
but it's built into the work. It's part of like the foundation of it. So it kind of like seeps its way through.
Yeah.
So that's like the great thing about like building something is you have parts of you in it at all times.
Right. Which is why it's sometimes so hard to get it out into the world. Cause you're like little by little trying to, you know,
yeah, that's the tough part,
execute
right?
Execute the vision. But then it's like, thank God you have the left and right brain. Cause you could like, you know,
rationalize it.
Yeah, like because sometimes you get if when you created something, you hold it like so close to the chest, and you're like so protective of it that it's like hard to like, you know, break past the actual product or whatever it is or creation or whatever into like the, you know, monetizing it or like distributing it or like pushing it out to the world. I think it's hard.
It is hard. I think eventually you come to a place where you find there's a method to it.
Yeah.
Whether it's like pulling in certain data and realizing like, okay, this thing performed well, let's do a spin-off of that in XYZ colors.
Yeah.
Whether it's something as simple as that.
Yeah.
Or just understanding like not all people are like me or like you. People like the general consumer of this thing is probably going to think of it in a different way.
That's real.
And they'll oversimplify it and they wouldn't care about the concept. They wouldn't care about who, like where the founder was born. They wouldn't care about all these different things. They'll just want like the end product.
Yeah.
So like, how do you, I know I keep throwing in like music references. There's this Lupe Fiasco song called Dumb It Down.
Dumb It Down? Okay.
Yeah. He talks about like the music industry when he was first making these like very conscious rap records.
Yeah.
The music industry was kind of like, hey, like the stuff's too deep.
Yeah.
Like, can you tone it down a bit?
Yeah.
So the whole song is about like the record executives, like implying that he needs to dumb down his lyrics because the average like listener is not going to latch onto it.
Talib Kweli has a skit like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I forget who the skit voices, but it's just he's like a record cool record executive and he's just saying like, oh, I think we should change our name to her, you know, like to really angle it so someone else can get it.
Yeah, I get that, because like people want what like the masses want. In more cases than not, they want what everyone else has.
which I'll never understand.
And like that's when that's when like something becomes commercialized, when it's like available at this large scale level.
Well, I guess that makes sense. We both have iPhones and like, you know.
Yeah, we both have iPhones.
But it's also like the best thing out available.
Yeah, I mean, I'm iPhone for life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't do the droids.
Yeah, so. If I get a green text, I'm like, bye.
Right? Yeah.
I'm like, did you receive my message?
I feel like the green texts are like, they go into like this big black hole.
It's too much.
Into like this empty abyss of nothingness. It's too much.
Thank you so much for tuning into Current Mood. Current Mood is produced by Jarrell Perry with music from Abjo and creative direction from Julian Alexander. Please follow us on Spotify, give us a sweet little rating,
and follow us wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you have any ideas on future guests or any insights, feel free to slide right into our DMs on Instagram at currentmood.io. Thank you so much for being a part of this community. It really means a lot.